This is the greatest and best song in the world.
Tribute.
Long time ago, me and my brother Kyle here, we was hitchhiking down a long and lonesome road. All of a sudden, there shined a shiny demon in the middle of the road. And he said,
play the best song in the world, or I'll eat your soul.
Well, me and Kyle, we looked at each other, and we each said, okay. And we played the first thing that came to our heads. Just so happened to be the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world. Look into my eyes and it's easy to see. One and one make two, two and one make three. It was destiny. Once every 100,000 years or so, when the sun doth shine and the moon doth glow and the dust doth grow. Needless to say, the beast was stunned. A whip crack went his rumpy tail, and the beast was done. He asked us,
be you angels?
And we said, nay, we are but men. Just a tribute. Couldn't remember the greatest song in the world. No, this is a tribute.
To the greatest song in the world, all Roy. It was the greatest song in the world, all Roy.
It was the best, so the greatest song in the world. And the peculiar thing is this, my friends, the song we sang on that fateful night, it didn't actually sound anything like this song.
This is just a tribute. You gotta believe it, and I wish you were there. Just a matter of opinion. Good God, God love you. I'm so surprised to find you can't stop me. I'm falling through the fire, rich motherfucker.
Once upon a time there was an owl called Neith, and he lived in a woods next to a tiny little village. The woods were cold in general, but it was actually winter at the time and it was snowing too, so it was exceptionally cold, and Neith was freezing his beak off, and he had a gimpy wing as well so he couldn't fly very well. It's safe to say that Neith the owl was having a bad time. So, that night, Neith decided to fly into the village and try to find somewhere a little bit warmer and a little bit safer to stay. It took him a very long time to fly into town because of his gimpy wing, which made it hard to fly in straight lines, and he kept going around in circles. But anyway, once he got there, he found a barn and decided to settle down in there for the night. The next morning, the owner of the barn is doing his normal barn-related activities, and he walks into the barn, and his footsteps wake Neith up, and Neith goes, hoot, hoot, because he's quite startled. Now the villager hears this and he is terrified. He runs straight out of the barn and he's screaming and he's crying and he's all like, "Help me! There's a terrible monster in my barn! You have to do something!" to all the other villagers. Now everybody is starting to panic and there's a massive crowd gathering around the barn and everybody is too scared to go inside and face the monster. It looks like all hope is lost. But then, from the crowd emerges the greatest and bravest man in the entire village, Oliver, aged 24. He's actually a knight in shining armour, and he says, "I will enter the barn, I will slay the monster, and I will return with its head." Everybody in the village cheered all at the same time. Yay! Because they all loved Oliver, aged 24, and they knew he would follow through and protect all of them. Now, Neith the Owl was hiding at the back of the barn because he was terrified. You see, I didn't mention before, but nobody in the village had ever seen an owl before, and the owl, Neith, had never seen the villagers before, so it was quite an unusual experience for everybody involved. So, Oliver, aged 24, pulls out his sword and slowly walks into the barn. Very, very, very carefully, he makes his way gradually across the barn towards the back, where Neith is hiding. And then suddenly, Neith and Oliver lock eyes, and they're staring dead at each other. And then Neith goes, "Hoot!" And Oliver is dead scared, so he runs straight out of the barn screaming, oh my god, this monster is terrifying. He's no normal monster, this is a demon monster from hell, and my sword won't have any effect on him at all. There's nothing I can do. So, all of the villagers had a vote, and they decided that if even Oliver, aged 24, couldn't slay the monster, there was only one thing left to do. They burnt the barn down to the ground, and they were never tormented by the demon monster ever again. The end.
La 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 la. Now, once upon a time, down south of the Borderway, there lived a little family, Samba Mama and her little daughter, Little Red Rumberhood. Ba 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 ba. Now, Samba Mama had baked a delicious cake and given it to her daughter to take to her grandma across the way in the woods. So Little Red Rumberhood was gaily off away singing, "I have a cake, I have a cake for my grandma." But little did she realize, as she's walking there through the woods, there hiding behind a tree was the villain, Tango Wolf. Tango Wolf sprung upon her and said, "Where are you going, little girl?" She said, "I'm going over to my grandma's house to bring her this delicious cake." La 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 la. But little did she realize that Tango Wolf was planning to get there before her. So taking a shortcut through the woods, Tango Wolf got to grandma's house and knocked upon the door. It was a very big door, and a voice from within said, "Who's there? 'Tis only I, your little granddaughter, and I have a delicious cake for you." "Come in," said the grandmother unsuspectingly. Tango Wolf walked over to the grandmother's bed, and before she realized, he sprung upon her and devoured her. Then changing into her clothes, he jumped into bed. There waiting for Little Red Rumberhood, who was gaily coming along singing, "I have a cake, I have a cake for my grandma," and the knocking upon the door. Same door, a voice from within said, "Who's there? 'Tis only I, your little granddaughter, and I have a delicious cake for you." "Come in," said Tango Wolf, disguised as the grandmother. Little Red Rumhood, walking over to her grandmother's bed, noticed that she didn't look as she always did. She noticed her big white teeth. She said, "Grandma, where did you get those big white teeth?" "Yeah," said Tango Wolf, "they're my new 1970 plates. I just got them at the license bureau." And then she noticed all the hair on her grandmother's face. She said, "Grandma, where did you get all that hair?" She said, "Yeah." She says, "How you fix the blade?" With that, Tango Wolf ripped off the disguise, started to chase Little Red Rumhood around the room. She started to yell for help. "Help, help, help, Congo Woodsman!" And Congo Woodsman heard the scream and he came quickly. With one quick sweep of his axe, he destroyed the wolf. And then taking out the grandma, who was very much alive inside the wolf's stomach, they all lived happily ever after. It could happen, you know.
This is the story of Little Red Riding Hood. Once upon a time, many years ago, in the land of Nod, there lived a lovely little girl named Red Riding Hood. One day, Red's mother called her into the kitchen and said, "Baby, I just got word that your grandma's on a real downer. Oh, what a drag, said Red. What's the bit? Hangoversville, for all I know, said her mother. Anyway, I fixed up a wild basket of ribs and collard greens. I'd like you to fall by Grandma's pad this afternoon and, lay the stuff on her. Cool, said Red, and while you're at it, why not add a jug? Granny would appreciate some sauce, I think. Okay, said her mother. Picking up the basket, Little Red headed for her grandmother's cottage, going by way of the deep woods. Little did she know that a big bad wolf lurked in the heart of the forest. She had traveled but a short distance when the wolf leaped out from behind a bush and confronted her. Ooh, said Red, startled. You freaked me out, man. I thought you were the militia. No, baby, I'm on your side, said the wolf. Say, you wouldn't be Little Red Riding Hood, would you? I ain't Queen Latifah, said Red. Well, Mama said the wolf, give me some skin. Sorry, Pop, said Red, I need all I got. Maybe some other time. Right now I have to make it over to my grandmother's place. Oh, square time, said the wolf. Why don't we have some laughs? Man, said Red, we've had him. Out of my way, I gotta take a trip. Hey, far out, said the wolf. Let's make it a twosome. Forget it, said Red. I dig, said the wolf. Later, baby. So saying, the wolf bounded off through the forest and was soon lost to sight. But unbeknownst to Little Red Riding Hood, he took a shortcut through the trees and in a few minutes stood panting before the helpless grandmother's cottage. Quietly, he laid a paradiddle on the door. That's a familiar beat, said the old woman. That wouldn't be Philly Joe Jones out there, would it? No Western Union, lad, the wolf. I have a special invitation to Dr. Funkenstein's opening at the Apollo. Hey, heavy, cried the grandmother, happily hip-hopping across the room. Imagine her horror when, upon opening the door, she perceived the wolf. In an instant, he had leaped into the house, gobbled her up, and disguised himself in her nightclothes. Hearing Red Riding Hood's footsteps on the stones of the garden path, he leaped into the poor old soul's bed and pulled the covers up over his chin. When Little Red Riding Hood knocked, he said, "Hit me again. Who goes?" "It's me, Gram," said Red. "Mother heard you were feeling pretty beat. She thought you might want to pick up on some ribs." "Right on," said the wolf. "Fall in." Opening the door, Red Riding Hood stepped inside, looked around the room. "Oh, wow," she said. "Gram, it looks like you recorded an album here last night." "Sorry, I didn't have time to straighten up," said the wolf. "What did you say was in the basket?" "Same old jazz," said Red. "Baby," said the wolf, "don't put it down." "I have to," said Red. "It's getting heavy." "Yeah, I didn't come here to play straight," said the wolf. "Let's open the basket. I got eyes." "I'm hip," said Red. "Grandma, what groovy eyes you have." "The better to dig you with, my dear," said the wolf. "But Grandma," Red said, I don't want to sound sassy, but what a long nose you have." "Yes," said the wolf, "it's a gasser." "And Grandma," said Red, "your ears are the most, to say the least." "The better to bug your phone with, my dear," said the wolf. "And Grandma," Red said, "your chops do not look like your regular dentures. And on the TV, they advertise stuff that'll banish unsightly facial hair. You know something? I don't want to sound like the man, but you don't look like my grandmother at all." "Baby," said the wolf, "you're spacing out." "No, man," said Red, "I just dug your nose again and it's too much. I don't want to come right out and ask to see your ID, but, like, where's my grandma?" The wolf stared at Red Riding Hood for a long, terrible moment. "Your grandmother," he said, "is gone." "I'm hip," said Red. "She swings like a pendulum do, but where is she?" "The old lady split," said the wolf. "I don't have me that jazz," said Red. Whereupon the wolf, being at the end of his patience, leaped out of bed and began to chase poor Red Riding Hood about the room. Little did he know that the wolf season had opened that very day, and a passing hunter could hear Little Red Riding Hood's frantic cry for help. Rushing into the cottage, the brave woodsman dispatched the wolf with one bullet. "Whoa, wow, man," said Red gratefully. "Your timing was like the end, you know?" And so it was.
In time past, though not long ago, there lived pigs in stature little and number three, who, being of an age both entitled and inspired to seek their fortune, did set about to do thusly. When they had traveled a distance, pig number first spake, saying, "Hearken, brethren, heed this tempestuous realm. Tarry we long from hearth and home, we shall fare, I fear, not well." And so, being collectively agreed but individually impelled, the diminutive swine set about each to erect for himself an abode. Pig numbered first did construct his house from straw. Pig numbered second did likewise, though rather not from straw, instead from sticks, meanwhile, unique in his imagining. Pig numbered three did erect as his domicile, stalwart and garish, a structure made from brick entirely. Ah, but soon there happened along, as is frequently the scenario in classic tale of protagonist pig or red hooded child. A wolf, carnivorous nature in full season, he called out to the straw ensconced swine, saying, "Pray thee, little pig, grant me entrance." But pig one recalled with sage foreboding that he is mad who trusts in the tameness of a belly pinched wolf, and responded immediately, "Nay, it shall not be, indeed, not by wit or whiskered jowl." To this most expected response, the wolf replied immediately, "Then steel thyself, little pig. Forthwith shall I endeavor, in blowing means both huffing and puffing, to dismantle yon flippin' flaxen fortress." Whereupon there issued forth from the wolf an exhale of gale proportions that quickly rendered straw hovel to dregs and dross, and carried aloft piglet and shattered quarters both. Exposed now to claw and fang, piglet one made haste, wolf in pursuit, to the stick festoon sanctum of peccary secondary. Causing pig two to cry out in dismay, "Well, this knots my knickers." Marshalling a feral wolf to my doorstep is nowhere among those endeavors amenable or congenial. "A thousand pardons," begged one. "It would seem the beast's baneful breath hath purged me of home and sound judgment alike." The malevolent blast of the wolf's exhale splattered second swine shack and short his sanctimonious scolding simultaneously. "Lo and behold," squealed two, "stand we now amid wooden wreckage, tremulous and vulnerable, with nary a strategy for eschewing the canine devourer looming in deadly proximity." "Strategy," exclaimed one, "while 'tis noble the contemplation of tactical particularities, pressed as we are with time restraints forbidding detailed strategical conversation, I would urge we run." Whether by their own fleet-footed competence or the wolf's windless attitude, the bantam porkers arrived at their ultimate kindred neighbor's inexpugnable brick ingress unscathed. Upon the third pig's door, with urgent hooves they pounded, calling out, "Unbar this entrance, and with haste we beseech thee." The third pig hailed from the American colonies and was possessing a vocabulary substantially less robust than his impromptu visitors, replied, "Say what?" "Seek we sanctuary," they implored, on the verge of hysteria, "lest we fall forthwith to the ravenous appetency of yonder approaching carnivore." Still confounded by their importunate words, pig three did render ajar his portal, whereupon one and two spilled through and collapsed beyond his threshold, enervated. "So y'all just wanted to come in? Why didn't you say that?" Hiss of the wolf could be heard. "Pray thee, pigs, grant me entrance." "The wolf," said one and two. "Wolf," said three. "What do you suppose he wants?" "He seeks to gain purchase within. Indeed, he would occupy this very alcove, were he but afforded the most meager of opportunity."
"Right.
You reckon I'll just ask him what he wants?" Under no circumstances will two flinging self against portal. There is naught to be gained accosting external opponent, save our own immediate demise. What did you say about my mama? House and occupants were again engulfed in a malevolent blast of wolfish wind. The foundation shook, the frame rattled, and lo, to the astonished eyes of piglets and encroaching scoundrel alike, stood the third pig's lodging undaunted. Aghast and befuddled, two queried of three, how does against such relentless and torrential onslaught this domicile endure? Pig three puffed out chest, tapped a hoof to the hearth, and responded, it's American made.
I was walking down Broadway the other day. I go to a movie there with big pictures outside. Everybody stabbing each other, drinking poison, choking, drowning. I thought it was a sort of Monte Cristo or something. I go inside, it's a thing called Hamlet with Laurence Olivier. Now, I heard of this Olivier before. He won prizes. But I never dreamed he was such a kid. There he is in a pair of black drawers with a necklace around his neck, sitting in one of those oily American chairs, and he don't say nothing, but the words is coming out anyway. It's a mental image. It gives you the feeling it's very uncomfortable. It's an effect. But I guess that was the idea, to shock you. If I could understand what he was talking about, I might have been shocked. I think it was some foreign language, probably British. Well, anyway, the whole thing settles around the fact that his uncle killed his father and Hamlet don't know what to do. Should he kill his uncle right away, or should he go ask his father first if his uncle really killed him? So he goes, as you can see, it's a kind of fantasy. So he goes, I personally go for realism. So he goes like musical comedies, you know, oh, we improve sounds, they come your way, they bring the flowers, oh, I love that Sophie Tucker. So then the ghost comes in. I was killed by your uncle, he says. He poured poison in my ears, which to me personally, there must be an easier way. Oh, how horrible, he says. How horrible, horrible, horrible. Well, that was horrible, all right. I almost walked out till I heard some singing. Now, I'm a sucker for music in a period piece. But this broad is singing in a voice that has no training whatsoever. And a song that will frankly never make the hit parade. And what lyrics? A ting-a-ling-a-ling, I'm coming to get your brother's snowshoes. And a hey-nanny-nanny with a blueberry wig. Well, we don't hear these songs for too long, thank heavens. Because the girl drowns. Right in the middle of one of them stanzas, she drowns. But she don't go down right away because she's laying on some tremendous stalks. And those powerful stalks keep her floating down that river like ivory soap, which she also is 99.44, 100% pure. In the end, her brother Laratus comes in and accuses Hamlet of first-degree drowning. And the big fight begins, stabbing and choking and fencing and drinking from goblets. And even his mother gets into it. Anyway, everybody's killed. Finally, Hamlet gets it, and they carry him out like he's been beaten by Bob Toily. Well, that's Hamlet for you, if you like that kind of thing. Personally, I go for something less complicated in a more realistic vein. T.S. Eliot, for instance, where you don't have to strain yourself too much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Merkel. We certainly do appreciate your views on Hamlet.
Oh, that's all right. It's just that I like to get my views across and get them over to the populace, the common people, man in the street, in the alleys, the man crossing the gutter. I'd like to be very serious for a moment and put a question to you, Mr. Merkel.
Well, I'm all ears. Shoot. What do you think of the present controversies regarding Shakespeare's plays?
There's a controversy on that particular subject?
Oh, well, yes.
Well, I didn't know that. I mean, the plays of Shakespeare are very simple to understand, if you...
The controversy centers around the fact that there is a group of people who do not think Shakespeare really wrote his plays.
Is that so?
Well, I'm certain you've heard of it.
Oh, well, of course I've heard of it. I wasn't aware of it, but I mean, I certainly heard of it, all right. Well, of course, there's some people who always gotta be different. There's people, for instance, who don't think Michelangelo did the Mona Lisa, when you find these crackpots about. There's also people who don't think that when Marlon Brando sings, that's his own voice. You'll always find crackpots wherever you look if you take the trouble to seek them out. Well, as regards Shakespeare's plays, I also heard that there's a possibility they might have been written by Somerset Maugham, for instance, but that's impossible. Somerset Maugham has a much more controversial touch. Cakes and ale, for instance. Who likes cakes with ale? You understand what I'm driving at, Mr. Thatcher?
Well, what about bacon?
Well, every morning, if you like, I personally go for straight cereal, little toast and jam, and that's it. It's simply a matter of taste there.
You don't think Marlowe is the author of Shakespeare's plays?
Oh, no, definitely not. Not by a long shot. You see, my half-brother Harry has a very definite opinion of why Marlon could never, in the remotest corner of your mind, have written Shakespeare's plays, and I must say I'm inclined to agree with him. He puts it this way. He went to the library the other day and looked up all the plays, Hamlet, Macbeth, Taming of the Shroud, and in each and every case,
There it was, as plain as the nose on your face. Right under the title of the play, it said Hamlet, and then underneath, Shakespeare. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Merkel. It's been a great pleasure. Well, think nothing of it, Daddy-O.
If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tear this old building down. Where did I lie? She was a woman, she was fine and fair. She had good looks, God knows, and cool black hair. Delilah, she gained old Samson mind. The first he saw this woman, it took me this time. Delilah, she sat down, Samson, me. Then tell me where your strength lies, if you please. She spoke so kind, God knows, she talked so fair. Then Samson said, Delilah, cut off my hair. You can shave my head, clean in my hand, head by skin, come ledger, is any old man. If I had my way, yeah, if I had my way, if I had my way, I'd tear this old building down. Great God Almighty, talk to me. Yes, sir. Talk to me now. Talk. Uh-huh. Talk. Uh-huh. Talk to me. Let me hear. Talk to me. Yeah. Make me feel good. What? Talk to me. Samson, all from his birth, he was the strongest man that ever had lived on earth. So one day while Samson was walking along, he looked on the ground and saw an old jawbone. He stretched out his arm, God knows it broke like thread. When he got to moving, then fell on one bit. Good God, if I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tear this old building down. Well, old Samson in the line got intact. Samson, he jumped up on the lion back. So you read about this lion had killed a man with his paws. But Samson, he got his hand in the lion's jaws. That beast until he killed him dead, and that beast made honey, that lion. If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tell it so. Ow! If I had my way, if I had. If I had my way, I would. Good God.
street he spied my face, I heard him howl. In a plot of frozen space, he told his tale. Poor man, he showed his hand, so righteous was his need. And me, so wise, I bought his prize for chicken. Smash a state of mind. Close inspection fast revealed his favorite kind. Poor kid, he overdid, embraced the spreading haze. And while he sighed, his body died in
return home from work, she reaches for a can of anchovies. As she spreads the tiny fish across a piece of lettuce, she notices a small note at the bottom of the can. Written on it is a telephone number. Curious, she dials and is told,
"Don't move, lady. We'll be right over."
Placing the phone back on the hook, she turns to see three smartly dressed men standing in her kitchen doorway. Before she realizes what is happening to her, she is rolled tightly in long sheets of cellophane, transported to an international airport, and placed on a waiting jetliner. All this being too much for her to comprehend, she passes out. Upon awakening, she finds herself in a strange, foreign-speaking nation. Alone, fearing her escape impossible, she seeks comfort in the arms of a confidential agent. With a trace of her kiss still warm upon his lips, he betrays her to the hands of three scientists who are engaged in diabolical avant-garde experiments previously performed only on insects and other small, meaningless creatures. Using her as their subject, they are delighted with the results. For the first time, a human being is transformed into a... Back in Portland, Maine. Her husband, Don, now chain-smoking 40 packs of cigarettes a day, sits at a local bar and has a few beers with the regulars. Bored, everyone's attention turns to the television set that just hangs from the wall.
Welcome to Bowling for Dollars.
Suddenly, Crazy Al says,
Say, Don, there sure is something familiar about that bowling ball.
To which a terrified Don replies,
Oh my God! That bowling ball! It's my wife!
And the lesson we learn from this story is, next time you place your order, don't forget to say, No anchovies, please.
It was Della and a dealer and a dog named Jake and a cat named Kalamazoo. Left the city in a pickup truck, gonna make some dreams come true. Yeah, they rolled out west with the wild sunsets and the coyote bathing the moon. Della and a dealer and a dog named Jake and a cat named Kalamazoo.
That cat could talk, what tales he tell about Della and the dealer and the dog as well. But the cat was cruel and he never said a mumbling word.
Down Tucson way there's a small cafe where they play a little cowboy tune. And the guitar picker was a friend of mine by the name of Randy Boone. Yeah, Randy played her a sweet love song and Della got a fire in her eyes. The dealer had a knife and the dog had a gun and the cat had a shot of rye.
That cat could talk, what tales he tell about Della and the dealer and the dog as well. But the cat was cool and he never said a mumbling word.
Yeah, the dealer was a killer, he was evil and mean and he was jealous of the fire in her eyes. He snorted his coke through a century note and he swore that Boone would die. And the stage was set when the lights went out. There was death in Tucson town. Two shadows ran for the far back door and one stayed on the ground.
If that cat could talk, what tales he tell about Della and the dealer and the dog as well. But the cat was cruel and he never said a mumbling word. Talk what tales he tell about Della and the dealer and the dog as well. But the cat was cool and he never said a mumbling word.
Two shadows ran from the bar that night and a dog and a cat ran too. And the tires got hot on the pickup truck as down the road they flew. It was Della and her lover and a dog named Jake and a cat named Kalamazoo. Left Tucson in a pickup truck, gonna make some dreams come true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If that cat could talk, what tales he tell about Della and the dealer and the dog as well. But the cat was cool and he never said a mumbling word. Said a mumbling word. If that cat could talk, what tales he'd tell about Della and the dealer and the dog as well. But the cat was cool and he never said a mumbling word.
Right. Good morning, my friends. Good evening, and how are you? Grab a seat. It's story time here at the Bitslap. Tonight we have a bunch of stories. You've already heard half of them, almost. And I might as well tell you, my story here is that 2 days ago it was 65 degrees here in Maine, which, believe me, blew a lot of minds. Today it's, right now it's 8 degrees, and we're expecting up to a foot of snow, and it's snowing like crazy outside. So, yeah, hey. There's a story for you. Anyway, we started with Tenacious D. Kyle and Jack there. That was Tribute. Neef the Owl. Classic bedtime tale from Oliver, age 24. Little Red Rumble Hood from our old pal, Mr. Rhythm himself, Sam Ulano. Steve Allen and his piano, Red Riding Hood. Three Little Pigs from John... Let's check this. My eyes are still not good. Branyon. John Branyon. And then our old friend Eddie Lawrence, that there, Hamlet. Samson and Delilah from Reverend Gary Davis. Steely Dan, a different version of Charlie Freak. No Anchovies, Please, from Jay Giles Band. And Hoyt Axton, one of the original storytellers right there. And that was, of course, Della and the Dealer. And a dog named Pooh or something like that. Anyway, okay, so tonight we have stories. Stories pretty much have a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's about the only thing. And they have to be about something and somebody or maybe have a classic twist ending, something, you know what a story is, what the hell am I telling you for? And they're not like math story problems either. You know, Joe has 47 pounds of kumquats and nobody's curious why. All right, so anyway, forget that stuff. All right, so I got more coming up for you. Just hang in there and grab a cup of tea and something, anything.
Been many spotty people in the history of mankind. Some are born spotty, some achieve spottiness, and some have spottiness thrust upon them. But there is one whom heaven has blessed with far more spots than all the rest. His name by now you will have guessed. It is, of course, Muldoon. Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, he's got spots all over his face. Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, he's got spots all over the place. He's so spotty, Spotty Muldoon, he's got spots where others have not. He's so grotty, Spotty Muldoon, oh what a lot of spots he's got. He's unbelievably spotty. A leopard cannot change his spots, and nor can a Muldoon. Of ointments he has tried the lot, drunk medicine by the spoon. But his face remains as ravaged as the craters of the moon. Poor old Spotty Muldoon. Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, he's got spots all over his face. Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, he's got spots all over the place. Of course, the worst thing about it is that he can't get hold of women. Whenever Spotty's out under the moon with a lovely lady, as soon as he tries to get romantic, they always say things like, "Do you know, Mr. Muldoon, you're unbelievably spotty." So Spotty wears a paper bag to cover up his head. He very seldom takes it off, not even in his bed. And sometimes in the evening, round about 11:30 usually, he wishes he was dead. Poor old Spotty Muldoon. Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, he's got spots all over his face. Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, he's got spots all over the place. They say that those who suffer in this world will be rewarded in the life to come. So when Spotty leaves this mortal coil and goes up into that great spot beyond the skies, he'll probably find that fashions are different up there, and suddenly he'll be in demand. So when Spotty gets to heaven, as Spotty will one day, he'll find that spots are all the rage along the Milky Way, and a million acneed angels will gather round and say, Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, you've got spots all over your face. Spotty Muldoon, Spotty Muldoon, you've got spots all over the place. Good old Spotty, Spotty Muldoon, how we love your heavenly spots. We're all potty for Spotty Muldoon. The fabbiest, trendiest, loveliest, geariest, sweetest, sexiest, spottiest angel on the earth. And that's Spotty.
Hi, all you sweet darlings out there. This is your Wolfman, Wolfman Jack, you know. I got a little bedtime story for you. It's about a young dude named Sweet William. Well, the other day, Sweet William was fronting a mellow denim vine, a 10-gallon sky, and walking on some high-heel kicks like he was born riding a Brahma bull. He sure ain't no cowboy.
I said, "Sweet William, my main man, I ain't seen you in a light year. You've been spacing, baby." He said back to me, "Jack, I'm beautiful. My game's uptight, all right, but there's some weird haps going down. I notice your strange strut," I said. "Jack, the other night me and my maid squeeze had a fight, you know, alley and fault. So I sprint and made it on the scene, wherein I scoped over this mellow chick, you understand? She was a stone fox, and I shot her my very best game. I said, 'Miss Lady, can I tell you you're beautiful? You're a superstar, mama.' Oh, the vibes was heavy, Jack. Right on, man," she purred. "Let it all hang loose." She rang my chimes, Brother Jack. She sure enough rang them. Now my main squeeze and me, we done made up. But me and my Jones been feeling weird the last couple of days. Well, you know, I gave old Will a mm-hmm and said, "What was the name of that shit, Will?" He said, "She told me they call her Venus." "Wow," I said, "Billy, do what you must, but Venus is one chick you cannot trust. You gotta look out for Lady V. She's older than time and smarter than me. Or you, Brother Will." "What you mean, man?" Sweet William asked. So I told him the last name of his Lady V. First I gave him a hint. It begins with D. D and D, Sweet William cried. "Right on, brother," I replied. "You need to get a shot for what you got." "But she was a lady," old Bill went right on. So I told him true. "Pretty or ugly or just plain Jane, on a lady or a chick who ain't, VD can hide. On us it scratches and itches, and it can really hurt. But a chick don't even know when VD's doing its dirt." I went on to tell William, "That's what you gotta tell your own main squeeze, and any other lady you try to please. I mean, there's free shots for what you got." And poor Brother Will says, "Man, I can't tell nobody that." He says, "Man, I don't even want to tell no doctor that." And I said, "Billy, baby, them cats is cool. They keep everything under their hats, man. And they have free shots that gonna cure what you got." Well, you know, old Wolfman Jack can be mighty persuasive sometimes. "What am I gonna do, Sweet William?" sighed. I said, "Them free shots is where it's at." Well, I took him down to the health center down the street and met the hippest old doc you could ever hope to meet. Gave Will a free shot for what he got and straightened him out about telling his chick and all the other ladies he's been with. I tell you, gotta tell them, Will, or they won't know. 'Cause it'll do a job, but it does it slow. And let me tell you, Will, it's a hard, hard way to go. And they got free shots for what the ladies got, too. Well, Sweet William did his thing, and he spread the word. And old Doc was pretty busy last I heard. Now I want all you hipsters and all you fine slick chicks to remember this story when you're out for kicks. And remember, as long as your Wolfman's on the scene, he gonna tell it to you straight and keep it clean. And you better believe me, there's gonna be no clap for the Wolfman, Jack. No clap for the Wolfman.
Two with a mouth full of chew and a trucker hat that said John Deere. He was dousing his eggs in ketchup, smelling like a whiskey and beer. In came a 5 foot redhead and threw hot coffee in his face. He went down with her on his back and they began clearing the place. Fist fight at the Waffle House. Try to hide from an angry green-eyed spouse. They're in the only place that's open past 3 a.m. Don't try to play her for a fool. She was first in her class at cosmetology school. After 4 long months of marriage, you'd think they might figure it out. But it was just like their senior prom night. Fist fighting at the Waffle House.
covered up his face, rolled up in a ball like an armadillo on the dirty floor. She had a knee on his gullet and was yanking on his mullet. They'd been in this position before. With a coffee cup in one hand, she rode him underneath the booth. She swung it back, I could hear it crack as she chipped his last good tooth. Fist fight at the Waffle House. Don't try to hide from an angry teenage spouse. She left the engine running and the baby sleeping out in the car. She was crying as she laid into him. Mascara running down her acne-ridden crystal meth skin. You could smell the lice medication in her hair. Curse words flying from her mouth. It was just like their wedding night. Fist fighting at the Waffle House. Now she was quick as a cat, she hit him so many times. You'd think her hands would have got sore. But when we thought it would end, she started hitting him again, telling him what it was for. This is for the time you got drunk on wine and wrecked our new used car. And this is for the time you hocked my wedding ring to get some ones for the titty bar. For making me live in a shack with four pit bulls and your drunken brother Tom. And this is for the time you drank a bottle of Jack and started kissing on my mom. Fist fight at the Waffle House. She bit his Leonard Skinner tattoo and he passed out. Then she went and hopped into her Nova and drove it away. Her torn halter top was lying on the floor. He picked it up and he staggered out that door. Climbed up on his tractor. He followed her home just as meek as a mouse. But they'll be back next Saturday night. Fist fighting at the Waffle House. Fist fighting at the Waffle House.
Prison most of that time. Ever since then, he just ain't been right. His old lady works days, and they fight most nights. Laid off and blown off, pissed off on booze. Double wide blues. Metallica song blasting out from two trailers down. It's them cut-off t-shirt and nunchuck kids coming around. Tonight they'll get drunk, try to get laid. End up in a fight out behind the arcade. You know, one of them little shits
broke my window last spring. I told his mama, she didn't do anything. She works two jobs, he runs loose. Double wide blue. Double wide blue. Double wide. My buddy Jimmy, now his trailer's cool. He got him a deck with one of them blue plastic pools. Working construction, he builds spec homes. His old lady left him, now he's down there alone. My friend Anita, she loves him, but he don't know. He's so busy chasing my neighbor's wife, Flo. Soap opera heaven without all the clues. Double wide blue. Double wide. He keeps to himself. The war took his smile like them pills took his health. Too old to run with the Klan anymore. U.S. flag hanging up outside of his door. I sit here watching all this and nothing go on. I don't get out much since Mama's been gone. Sometimes it's nice having nothing to lose. Double wide blue. Double wide blue. I got the blue. Double wide. Take me home, boy.
Tell a story, I can tell it all, about the mountain boy who ran illegal alcohol. His daddy made the whiskey, the son he drove the load, and when his engine roared, they called the highway Thunder Road. Sometimes into Asheville, sometimes Memphis town, the revenuers chased him, but they couldn't run him down. Each time they thought they had him, his engine would explode, and he'd go by like they were standing still on Thunder Road. Thunder, thunder over Thunder Road. Thunder was his engine and white lightning was his load.
Moonshine, moonshine, when is the devil's thirst?
The law, they never got him, cause the devil got him first.
On the 1st of April, 1954, the federal man sent word he'd better make his run no more. He said 200 agents were covering the state. Whichever road he tried to take, they'd get him sure as fate. Son, his daddy told him, make this run your last. Your tank is filled with 100 proof, you're all tuned up and gassed. Now don't take any chances, and if you can't get through, I'd rather have you back again than all that Mountain Dew. Thunder, thunder, over Thunder Road. Thunder was his engine and White Aladdin was his load.
Moonshine, moonshine, when's the devil's thirst?
The law, they never got him, cause the devil got him first. Roaring out of Harlem, revving up his mill, he shot the gap at Cumberland and screamed by Maynardville. With teaming on his taillight, roadblocks up ahead, the mountain boy took roads that even angels feared to tread. Blazing right through Knoxville, out on Kingston Pike, then right outside of Bearden, there they made the fatal strike. He left the road at 90, that's all there is to say. The devil got the moonshine and the mountain boy that day. Thunder, thunder, over Thunder Road. Thunder was his engine and White Lightning was his load.
Moonshine, moonshine, when is the devil's thirst?
The law, they never got him, cause the devil got him first. The law, they never got him, cause the devil got him first.
He's pointed out as kinda square. The biggest thing that happens is the county fair. I guess that's why it seemed like such a big event, what we all call the Carroll County accident. The wreck was on the highway just inside the line. Walter Browning lost his life, and for a time it seemed that Mary Ellen Jones would surely die, but she lived long enough for her to testify. Walter Browning was a happy married man, and he wore a golden wedding ring upon his hand. But it was gone, nobody knew just where it went. He lost it in the Carroll County accident. Mary Ellen testified he flagged her down, said he was sick and could she drive him into town. No one even doubted what she said was true, cause she was well respected in the county too. I went down to see the wreck like all the rest. The bloody seats, the broken glass, the tangled mess. But I found something no one else had even seen. Behind the dash in Mary's crumpled up machine, a little matchbox circled by a rubber band, and inside the ring from Walter Browning's hand. It took a while to figure out just what it meant. The truth about the Carroll County accident. By dark of night, I dropped the ring into a well and took a sacred oath that I would never tell. The truth about the Carroll County accident. Cause the county ordered Dad a marble monument. I lost him in the Carroll County accident.
This old man and me, bar, and we were having us some beers and swapping night on cares.
talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. He said, I fought two wars, been married and divorced. What brings you to Ohio? He said, damn if I know. We talked an hour or two about every girl we knew, what all we put them through, like two old boys will do. We pondered life and death, he lit a cigarette, said these damn things will kill me, yeah. But God is great, beer is good, people are crazy. Last call is 2 a.m. I said goodbye to him. I never talked to him again. Then one sunny day, I saw the old man's face. Front page obituary, he was a millionaire. He left his fortune to some guy he barely knew. His kids were mad as hell, but me, I'm doing well. And I drive by today to just say thanks and pray. And I left a six pack right there on his grave. And I said, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
Long hair back, put a cartridge in his gun and stepped outside his shack. Saddled up his buckskin man, rode off into town. Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Luann fixed her makeup, straightened out her dress, picked up a photograph and held it to her breast. How could she ever love him? He never was around. Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Flesh and blood, it turns to dust, scatters in the wind. Love is all that matters in the end. Sheriff Paul was fast asleep, his hat off in his lap, when he got a package that woke him from his nap. He unrolled a poster, couldn't help but frown. It was Jesse with the long hair hanging down. They'd been compadres many years before. Jesse saved his life one time back before the war. Now was the king of thieves, he wore it like a crown. Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Flesh and blood, it turns to dust, scatters in the wind. Love is all that matters in the end. Mr. Brown the banker hid the money in his case. It was time for him to leave, just got
forsaken place. Cause true love loved the outlaw who hated Mr. Brown. That was desolate with the long hair hanging down. Mr. Brown had taken the land that Jesse owned. The banker claimed that Jesse had not repaid his loan. Truth and lies were tangled, but when the truth unwound, it was Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Mr. Brown was all alone, Luann came walking in. She pulled a pistol from her purse and pointed it at him. When the door blew open, she turned to look around. There was Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Mr. Brown grabbed Luann's gun and held it to her head. I'll blow her to kingdom come is what the banker said. In that fateful moment, Jesse stood his ground. Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Flesh and blood, it turns to dust, scatters in the wind. Love is all that matters in the end. The bullet that killed Mr. Brown came through the window pane. Put a hole above one eye and lodged down in his brain. Never saw a puff of smoke, no flash, no fire, no sound from Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Sheriff Hall was fast asleep, his hat down on his eyes, when he got a letter, and much to his surprise, a picture of the sweet Luann in a wedding gown, and Jesse with the long hair hanging down. Flesh and blood, it turns to dust, scatters in the wind. Love is all that matters in the end, my friend.
There were signs beside the road like Jesus says, and relieve yourself the fast and gentle way. I was looking for an old man who lived way back in these hills, who just might have a story I could tell. Pretty soon the blacktop disappeared. I felt the car change to a lower gear. I took a drink of liquor just to chase away a chill. I was 27 miles from Olive Hill. Ahead, I saw the bridge where I turned right. A dirt road led straight up a mountainside. I pulled up to a farmhouse I thought I had seen before. An old man and his dog were at the door. They told me this old-timer knew this land. I told him, sir, I just don't understand why the kids in this state just grow up and move away and leave the land where they were born and raised. He said, son, you can't make it on this land unless you're happy working with your hand. There ain't no kids today that want to stay and work it out. They want to see the things they hear about. He said, I cleared this whole farm off myself, and I'd work it now, but time has got my help. Then staring out the window, resting in his easy chair, he told me what I'd really come to hear. That, you know, son, people used to tell their kids, now I don't want you to have to work the way I did. They don't, and some will tell you that it's a shame, but you have to think before you place the blame. I guess we must have talked a half a day till I told him that I'd best be on my way. He shook my hand and said, I'm glad I met you, Mr. Hall. But I guess there ain't no song here after all.
Thank you. Now Sam likes jam, and jam likes Sam. They get along like apple and pie. Sam gets fatter eating the jam, and the jam gets harder to buy. A guy named Kelly makes the jelly in a purple grotto on Mars. He ships the stuff to his good friend Sam in cosmocomical jars. Now, jam is great for putting on weight, but Martian jelly is the most. Sam ain't little no more, no ma'am. He reaches from coast to coast. While Mars exports it, Sam imports it. It's making all the local jelly makers sore. What worries me is a jam like this could lead to a Martian war. Watch out! Yeah, that was Flight Lieutenant McCusick with his rocket tube. You know, Sam, who eats jam all the time, well, you know how big you can get from that. What worries me, he won't talk about stars or planets or anything. All he says is...
Jam? How about some ham with my jam?
You see what complications that could lead to with Sam? While Mars exports it, Sam imports it. He's making all the local jelly makers sore. What worries me is a jam like this could lead to a Martian war. You know what I mean. No? Oh. Well, now, if you take jam and ham, then you don't have any more jam, because what you have is jam and ham. Jam and ham. Yeah, well, that sounds pretty good.
tasty, thank you. Eating raw fish is disgusting. Buddha is the only way. Jesus is the one way. Communism, democracy. East is red, 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 and red.
Peking in the east, New York in the west. Each place thought that it was the best. But the sun and the moon on their earthly quest.
Society in a time.